Okay, you are tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are listening to the Sitting in the Park show. Today it's going to start off as a special show because I have a Chicago soul music artist on the phone. I have artist Barbara Green, who cut the record Young Boy, an excellent Chicago soul record, in the mid-60s, and she's going to be talking about herself and her musical career. So can you hear me, first of all?
Yes, I can.
Okay. So first of all, thanks so much for being on the phone and telling your story.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
So are you originally from Chicago?
I'm originally from a small southwestern suburb called Argo, Illinois, which begins at 63rd and Harlem.
Okay, that's near Summit, right? That's right.
Summit is Argo.
Okay.
Some people hyphenate the name, call it Summit, Argo, Illinois. It got its name originally from Corn Products Corporation, who made Argo starch. And years and years ago, it was referred to as Argo, and then as time progressed, people hyphenated it Summit, Argo, Illinois.
I never knew that.
Yeah.
So, but pretty much it's adjacent to Chicago. So you weren't.
Yeah.
You're not in some far out suburb. You're right next to Chicago.
No, when you cross over Harlem, you're in Chicago.
So, how did you get started? How did you get involved with music, first of all?
Well, I started singing at a really very young age. I guess my story's like a lot of others, in church, Antioch Baptist Church in Argo, Illinois. I started singing in front of people probably at the age of six. My godmother, Lorenza Brown Porter, used to put on extravagant fashion shows back in the day. She used to have like the Jimmy Smith Orchestra, and I remember when I was 6 or 7 years old, I asked her, could I sing? And she was the type of person that never blew off kids. And she said, of course, just go up and tell the band what you want to sing. And I have watched this movie on TV, Sentimental Journey, and remembered the tune in my head, although I didn't remember the words. So I rehearsed with the band the night before her big show, and lo and behold, the next night, my parents allowed me to sing. And I sang what was my version of Sentimental Journey, although the words weren't exactly the correct words. So I just kept singing in church at that time, and my godmother was a founding member of the Argo Gospel Singers, who recorded professionally for VJ Records. They were the first black gospel group to sing at the Apollo, and she increased my interest in music. And then around 13, I guess I was in eighth grade, I went to her and said, you know, I want to make a record. And she says, well, I guess if it's okay with your, you know, with your mom and dad, your parents. I said, but here's the thing. I don't want to sing gospel. I want to sing rock and roll, because I had grew up in, you know, this gospel church music surrounding. So she said, well, you know, get your band together. And I did that.
So what inspired you to sing rock and roll or R&B music instead of gospel?
Well, at that time, we would listen to WVON radio in Chicago. We would also listen to, we could pick up Randy's records in Tennessee from where we were in Argo, Illinois. And so that influenced me to just want to sing pop. And also, my mother and father always played music in the house. They always played records. We had a lot of records in the house. So that inspired me to just want to sing pop music. And I would always imitate the records that I heard on the radio, and the records that my parents played. They were into, they played a lot of jazz, they played rock and roll. I could just remember hearing music from the time I was little, but I just wanted to be a pop singer.
So how old were you when you got a chance to cut that record?
Actually, I was in eighth grade, and it was probably it was before graduation from eighth grade in June, probably in April or May, that I recorded the record at Universal Studios in downtown Chicago. Then graduation came a couple of months later, in eighth grade graduation, and I was in ninth grade when they actually released a record on WVON. It was the Pick Hit of the Week.
So were you 13 years old when it was recorded?
I had turned 14 when they released the record on the radio, and actually 13 when I recorded it.
Okay, so you were very, very young.
Very young.
which makes the song kind of funny, singing about how someone else is a young boy, too young.
Yeah. I had a kind of, I guess, a mature voice for my age, which is, you know, when I ask her, my godmother, Lorenza Porter, she had heard me sing, so she really knew that I could sing. She didn't interfere too much with what I put together to go in an audition for James Bracken at the time, who owned the VJ record. So I got some neighborhood kids, the Pfizer brothers. One played lead guitar, bass guitar. I think I had a drummer. And we put some songs together. And she took me downtown to interview for VJ Records. I remember Mr. Bracken being there, Abner, which at the time I think he was vice president of VJ. I'm not, you know, too clear on what these people's roles were at that time. But I auditioned for him one night, and then in the next couple of days I was in the studio rehearsing with Richard Parker, Barrett Strong, the Dells. They were on that label at that time. And they were teaching me the tunes that you listen to now, the four tunes, Young Boy, Should Have Treated You Right, A Lover's Plea. Can't even remember the fourth. But
Our Love Is No Secret.
Yeah, Our Love's No Secret Now. I cut those four tunes the same night at Universal Studios with my mother and my godmother. We were all there at the studio, and of course, the Dells as the backup.
What year was that again?
This was 19. It had to be 64. 1964, and then the record was released September of 64.
And you had told me that you actually had to get a band together just to audition. Like, you didn't go there by yourself and sing. You brought in some people to play and sing.
Well, yeah, we were all very young. The Pfizer brothers, I think, and one was Arthur Manning and the Pfizer brothers. We all were raised in the church. They played guitar in the church, drums. So we were all friends already. And I just went to them and said, I'm trying to do this audition. Miss Lorenza's going to take me, and I want to do at least, she said, to prepare at least three songs. So we started rehearsing. The only song that I can remember that I auditioned with was a blues song that was a little back then much for a 13-year-old to sing, but I sang this blues song, and I guess I sang it with such maturity that it just kind of sealed the deal, because I was in the studio recording in the next couple, practicing to getting ready to record in the next couple of days.
So a little much, you mean it was risque?
It was risque.
Okay.
I don't know who made the record, but it was You Got Me Running, You Got Me Hiding, you know. Because my parents, my dad especially, would listen to blues. They were blues lovers, jazz lovers. And I knew all these older people tunes, you know, that I had grew up around the house listening to. So I went in with a mature voice and I think a mature set of three songs.
Okay, well, let me play the record, which was your hit, and we could talk a little bit more.
Okay.
So this is the first record that, and it didn't come out on VJ, right? It came out on a sub-label of VJ?
It was a subsidiary of VJ Records called Vivid. Mr. Bracken's wife name was Vivian, and that's how they got VJ. And then the subsidiary label was called was Vivid, and I think another subsidiary under VJ was Brunswick. But Youngboy was recorded originally on Vivid label.
Okay, so here's the record, then we could talk some more. This is Barbara Green with her hit Too Young. Okay, that was just Barbara Green with her hit Young Boy. And if you're just tuning in, I have Barbara Green on the phone right now talking about her recording career. So just before playing the record, we were talking about how she was only 13 years old when she recorded that record, and her godmother had taken her to VJ Records, and she had auditioned, and a few days later she was recording. So that all must have happened pretty fast, right?
Oh, yeah. Things just started to happen so fast. It was unbelievable, especially for someone from a small town, like a little Mayberry town. When they released the record, they probably put a lot of promotional time into it because it was Pick Hit of the Week on WVON radio. And every time you turn the radio on, you hear the record. And people in my small town especially, they just were amazed that someone from a little town called Argo, Illinois was, being played all over the radio.
And were you excited just to meet the Dells and all those other artists, or had you, interacted with them before through
No,
your
I had never met anyone. I had met famous gospel artists because... And again, I said my godmother was into professional gospel music, but I had never had an opportunity to meet people from the other side, pop music and that. When I went to rehearse and I met Richard Parker first, and then I think the next couple of days he brought in the Dells after teaching me the tunes that he taught me. I was like, oh, is this real? But they were very nice. I do remember them after the record being released and being played all over the radio. They, Richard Parker and Chuck Barksdale and another member of the Dells came to my mother's house in Argo and had dinner. It was on a Sunday. And they were coming to ask if permission if I could go out and sing at a club. I think it was the Budland then on 63rd off of King Drive.
Okay.
And, of course, my parents were apprehensive, but, you know, he said that, you know, you could come with her. She won't be out, you know, like where the people are. She'll just come in from backstage. She'll lip sync her song and, you know, then she'll leave, you know, with you. So I remember that being my first public appearance after Youngboy was released on the radio. And then I did, after that I did Sock Hops with Herb Ken at the time. He used to be on the west side at Our Lady of Sorrows. And every Friday night he would do a Sock Hop. And I remember that I sang there. And from there I started to get bigger singing deals like at theaters, the Fox Theater, theaters in Indiana, Michigan City, Indiana. So it just kind of grew from there. And then by this being my freshman year in high school, there was that was also a lot of excitement because there was that excitement of being in high school, you know. So I was very popular upon entering my freshman year at Argo Community High School. I remember everybody buying the record. I was in the school choir because I just loved to sing. I was in the school a cappella choir. I was in the school play. So I just became like an overnight popular girl at high school. And the thing about it, Argo High School has always had over 1,500, 1,600 kids. You know, so to come in the door with everybody in the school, you know, knowing who you are, that was exciting as well. And then everybody buying your record, because I remember they gave me a box of the 45s, and I'd sell them to my friends in the choir and at school. So that September, I ran for freshman homecoming queen. And by the school being probably 95% white and 5% black, and people having to vote for you, my friend says, well, you're never going to get that. There's never been a black homecoming, you know, for a freshman, sophomore, junior, or senior queen. But that year, I was voted freshman homecoming queen. And it was just an exciting year and an exciting time in my life. I don't think I realized how many people was actually listening to Youngboy until later in my life. Then when I started to do some research and focus on it, I found out that, you know, in the southern states it had went to almost number one. In the Midwest it had reached 17, I think, on the top 20 soul charts. But then after, I want to say maybe 6 months later, you know, I was going to VJ Studios, and it was like everybody was sad. I'm going like, what's going on here? And well, what I found out is that they were closed down because the government closed them supposedly for income tax evasion. And that kind of ended my career right there.
Yeah. Before getting to how they went out of business, I wanted to ask about one thing about the record was that it seems very it sounds like Hello Stranger a lot.
Yes.
And because it was not just a female lead with a backing male group, but the backing male group is the same because the Dells mm-hmm. sings on Hello Stranger and they sing on your record, and it's like so. Did you feel that it was influenced by Hello Stranger?
Actually, when I met Richard Parker and the Dells, I believe if my memory is correct that Richard Parker used to write for Barbara Lewis. And he actually had something to do with the writing of Hello Stranger, and he also had been involved in writing a couple of tunes for Mary Wells. Actually, when they released my record on the radio, a lot of people, before they would even say my name, thought it was Barbara Lewis because our voices sound a lot alike. And not only that, the tunes, the melodies of the tunes were similar. So
yeah, because one thing about the Barbara Lewis record was that because it had both kind of a soul and a pop sound, I think it crossed over and got not only R&B play, but it got pop chart play. Do you know if your record also crossed over in a similar way?
You know, I don't know, but I've been, since the Internet, which is a marvelous thing, someone wrote on a blog where they have a few of my tunes posted on Pookie's website, that in 1968, the records, all four tunes were released on Renee Records, which I'm just learning this year.
Yeah, it's a Philadelphia record label.
Mm-hmm.
And they spelled your name differently on it, too.
They added an E.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But someone wrote on the blog that in 68, the record did go pop to the top R&B and also was on the Billboard charts. Now, this is a fact that I've not been able to check out, but, you know, as people comment, because it's only been a couple of weeks ago that I even knew that the record was posted on YouTube. And I said, oh, well, this is amazing. I mean, who remembers this song from 1964, or who even cares to remember? And then I just kept searching the website and found it in a couple of other sites. One person has posted it from England in the UK, and he said it was quite popular over there. So this is all kind of like happened in the last couple of weeks that I'm finding out, oh, people are, you know, collectors of my music, and it's amazing.
Yeah, I think in Chicago, like, people who aren't even collectors, but a lot of people who love the music from back in the day definitely remember your record because it was like
right,
a classic sound.
Right.
So, and you said you knew nothing about how your record ever got onto a Philadelphia label.
I didn't even know it was on another label until a week ago,
and so,
when I was surfing YouTube, that it was on Renee Records, and the guy that posted it there lives in the UK.
Okay, so Vivid Records, VJ Records, did release a second single on you, called Our Love Is No Secret Now and Lover's Plea on the flip. And that record, you were saying it was recorded in the same session, is that right?
The same night. Well, all four were recorded in the same night. And it's amazing because, to my knowledge, only Young Boy was released. I never knew that the others had been released, but like I said, until like a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, the other one is, I have it as a promotional copy. I'm not sure if they actually release it to the stores or if they just put
mm-hmm.
promotional copies out.
Mm-hmm.
But it, both tracks, both sides of that song, that record are also good.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm particularly fond of A Lover's Plea. I think they kind of withheld A Lover's Plea because of my age, and the words to the song are a little, you know, more provocative than Young Boy. So I could see them waiting 4 years to even kind of bring that out. If you kind of listen to the words, it's for a more mature person to be singing, which is why it was probably not released, and Young Boy was the one to be released.
Let me play Lover's Plea, then, and we could talk a little bit more.
Okay.
So this is Barbara Green with the B-side of her second single, and this track is called Lover's Plea.
Come on home.
Okay, that was just Barbara Green with a track from her second 45 that was released. That was called Lover's Plea. And if you're just tuning in, Barbara is on the phone telling her story. So we were just talking about how that was recorded at the same session, at the same time that Young Boy was recorded. So that record, did it get any radio play, do you know? Or you said you didn't even know it was released?
I did not even know that that record had been released. It's just coincidental. I was surfing YouTube maybe a week and a half ago, and some gentleman from the UK has posted a Lover's Plea and I Should Have Treated You Right, which he said is very popular over in the UK for vinyl collectors, and also that my record was very well known in the area over there where he lives. So that was kind of amazing to find out that, because all these years I thought only that Young Boy was the only released record.
Yeah, actually it came out on both, they released it both on Vivid and on Renee, but it's definitely much harder to find than Young Boy, which was obviously the hit record.
Mm-hmm.
So you were talking about before that you found out that VJ had suddenly gone out of business.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, one day almost every pop singer you could name, you could see, you know, coming in and out of VJ, you know, the Dells, Barrett Strong,
Jerry Butler.
You know, it was just amazing. And then it seems like a few months later, they were closed. Their doors were actually closed. So then, you know, I didn't too much focus on music. I just focused on, you know, graduating high school and being a kid. Although, you know, after I entered adulthood, you know, I did, like, you know, get my own band together, and I played different places in Chicago, High Chaparral. Then they used to have a show up north on the north side that I would do all the time. Can't think of the name of it, but I mostly just did shows with my own band and did my own thing for several years. Then when I was 29, I decided to go to school and learn music Park West. That was one of the other places that I used to do shows. And what I used to do is just would produce my own shows. I got into, learned, you know, how to produce shows, and I would just produce and get myself signed up at some different clubs all over the city. So when I turned 29, I got the desire to learn music, how to rewrite music. During all these years, I also worked for the City of Chicago Department of Revenue. So I decided just to go to school, and I enrolled in the American Conservatory of Music and earned a bachelor's there in voice and music. And from there, I went to Roosevelt University, where I earned a bachelor's in the Fine Arts Music Theater. When I graduated from Roosevelt, I'm well into my 30s, but I got a part in a theater, traveling theater show, Big River. It was the story of Huck Finn and the runaway slave Jim.
Was that the late 70s?
That was actually 89 or 90. We're talking about 89 or 90 now, because I'm into my 30s now.
Okay, so
yeah.
So in the time that you said you were producing your own shows and playing clubs in Chicago, how come, did you ever try to get a record deal again?
I never tried to get a record deal again. I just would do, you know, clubs and keep my own band and produce my own shows.
What type of music did you play in those clubs?
Actually, I just did pop music. You know, rock and roll, you know, some older stuff. I would do a wide range of music because I was interested in a wide range of music. After getting involved in the American Conservatory, I even got involved in classical music. Some of my professors there got interested in teaching me classical music, and I would perform shows at the theater in the American Conservatory. So I just did a wide range of stuff, even African music, you know. So I just loved music, and I would produce shows, not just featuring myself. I would have other performers on these shows that I've met along the way, you know, like at the conservatory, younger people who were into music. I produce these shows and pull people in and put them on the shows with me.
And you said that you went to the conservatory, and then in the late 80s you started doing a play?
In 89 or 90, I was selected to do a part in Big River at the Fox Theater in St. Louis. And it was a musical theater play. And I had just graduated with a musical theater degree. So I did this performance in the same year that I same month that I graduated. I was selected to go to St. Louis, and I got a part in Big River, where I sung one of the main feature songs in the play.
How long did that run?
That ran for about 30, 40 days. I decided to leave the play because there was a lot of attention in that, because this was a play about slavery, slave days, and the part that I had to play was the part of a slave. There was a lot of tension with the cast. And I just couldn't get into being playing a role as such. And it was not so much the role. It was that in my costume they wanted to pad me, you know, to make me look like one of the fat slaves from, okay. You know. And I'm going, well, all slaves weren't heavy, and you know, I just had a conflict with that. So I did it for about 30 days. And then I came home.
Home back to Chicago?
Home back to Chicago.
So did you do any music stuff after that?
After that, I tried, I did. I got a job teaching with the Chicago public schools, and I taught theater. And at the same time, I had a second job with the Chicago Park District after school program, teaching music theater to youth and young kids and teens. And I did that for about 5 years. After that, it was very difficult to get a job in the public school systems in the arts because they began to cut the arts. Hello.
Yeah.
Okay.
So did you have to teach something else after that?
After that, when I couldn't get a job teaching theater, I went back to school.
Okay.
Yet again, and obtained a degree in education, and then I just kind of sucked me away from music because now I'm in just education, no theater, no music. And I kind of liked what I was doing. I did like what I was doing. And I just kept going to school. And just recently, in July, I earned a master's in the science of special education. Because there's still very few to no jobs, you know, teaching music or theater arts in the public schools, which I now teach in Milwaukee Public School District.
When did you move up to Milwaukee?
6 years ago.
Okay. So have you ever considered doing any more music since?
Well, I had really not considered it until just recently, going on YouTube and just seeing all of the plays that my music is getting. I got an email from a gentleman that has posted one of the websites on YouTube, and I've gotten an offer just Friday to consider recording for a company, a record company in Philadelphia. Haven't given them an answer as of yet, But I am heavily leaning towards, you know, recording again.
Yeah, it would be great to, great mm-hmm. for you to finally get something else out mm-hmm. After you recorded when you were 13.
Yeah.
First of all, thanks so much for being on the air and telling the story of sort of this lost hit record that nobody knew the background behind now.
Well, thank you so much for having me and remembering me. I was overwhelmed when they said, well, give Bob a call because he knows your record. He knows your music. So I thank you for all these years of, remembering my music and giving me playtime on your radio program.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, a lot of people in Chicago remember your record.
Oh, absolutely.
So do you have any last words for the listening audience?
Well, thank you very much, and I love Chicago, and I'm only here for a minute in the mill, as they call it, but Chicago is my home and will always be my home. And hopefully maybe you'll hear from an old artist again.
Okay, yeah, hopefully. I'll definitely let people know.
Okay.
Okay, well, thanks again, and I will be in contact with you.
Okay, thank you, Bob, for having me.
Okay, have a good night.
You too.
Okay, bye.
Bye.